Amen. We are in Mark chapter 7, verse 24 in particular, and right now we are in this relationship between conflict and progression. Conflict is occurring in the narrative, and usually it is followed by progression or expansion of the kingdom. Something significantly advancing the kingdom occurs after the conflict. We had conflict that was described with Herod, Antipas, and John the Baptist in 6:14 through 29. And then that's followed up by the expansion of the kingdom we see in the feeding of the 5,000 in 6:30 and following. Then right after that, we see the conflict and the chaos of the sea with Jesus and his disciples in 6:45 and following, which is followed up by the conclusion of the land of the gospel in the land of Gennesaret at the end of chapter 6. And then now we've been dealing with the conflict, in particular between Jesus and the Jewish elite, particularly from Jerusalem. And what has that conflict been over? What's it been about? What's that? Tradition, kind of. What in particular?
Unclean.
Clean and unclean. But initially it was the ceremonial washing of the hands. But then it gets broadened out by Jesus to really unclean and clean as an entire category, right? Where it was because he says the food, it's not anything on the outside, Jesus ultimately concludes, that makes you unclean. But it's what comes out of your heart that makes you unclean. For that's really what reveals your ritual purity. Which is pretty astounding coming from the Jewish perspective. Why? Yeah, we have entire books, significant chunks of a lot of books that are dedicated to describing what is clean and what is unclean. And what are the implications of that if Jesus just says, nah, everything's clean? What are the implications of that?
He overrules what God says.
What's that?
He overrules what God says.
Yeah, he's changing the Old Testament. And we talked about the implications of that. The only person that is allowed to do that is God Himself because He's the one that laid it down. Therefore, Jesus challenging not just the traditions of the elders, but expanding it even to violate Levitical law is huge. And we talked about how that shouldn't shock us in light of the fact that we don't do sacrifices today. He changed other stuff too. In light of the fact that there is no temple and that doesn't mess up any of our worship, He changed other stuff too. Right? Man, I was talking about this in my Acts class because we're in Acts chapter 10. And that's, I understand, that is not an easy concept to grasp. I get it. Like, I totally get it. Even I honestly have been trying to find a way to word it in a way that doesn't shock people or get people's defenses up too quick. And I can't find one. And the reason why is because it's just what he did. I don't know any other way to describe it that is less... That is accurate and yes, and yet less shocking than what Jesus was doing. You have to understand, this is huge to a Jew. This is what defines their identity as the people of God, clean and unclean. And he says, not anymore. Major conflict that's going to lead to expansion in verse 24. Because what we are going to find is that the clean-unclean issue is not just about rituals and laws. It's about people. Because what we're going to see next is the faith or the interaction with the Syrophoenician woman, a Gentile of Gentiles. This is the same issue that we see that surfaced in Acts chapter 10. Peter sees this vision of you know, all of the animals, both clean and unclean, and the voice comes to him and he says, Peter, go kill and eat. And Peter says, I don't think so. I have never eaten anything unclean in my entire life. I am a kosher Jew. And God says, no, I want you to kill and eat. Three times they argued about this, it says in the text. I don't think the three times is by accident, by the way. Although you have to think, you have to wonder if, like, you know, the rooster's on the sheet looking at Peter going, really? We're going to do this again? Like, honestly? Okay, Peter, do I need to crow just to remind you? Okay. Nevertheless, he argued with them three times. But ultimately, the issue was not food, was it? Because right after the vision, what happens? Yeah, the conversion of Cornelius, the Roman centurion Gentile, in the city of Caesarea. Hello? If that's not the definition of an enemy, I don't know what is. You are one of the key leaders in the Roman army. You are a Gentile. Your name is Cornelius. And you're living in Caesarea. named after Caesar. And that's who Peter has to go to in order to tell him, now all things are clean. See, so even post-resurrection, the disciples don't get this teaching because it is so shocking. They don't get it. Peter, matter of fact, this is the issue in Acts chapter 15. This is the issue that in Galatians 1 and 2 that Paul really is referring to whenever he says, I even had to rebuke Peter over this. Why? Because Peter was just a good Jew. And he had a hard time overcoming this prejudice of clean and unclean. Because ultimately, clean and unclean is not about being ritually pure. It's about people and you being separate from them. You are the people of God that is not to mix with the Gentiles. Therefore, this is what you eat and compared to what they don't, what they eat. This is what you don't eat. You see what's going on? It's a separating agent. And Jesus, by saying all things are clean, is saying, guess what else that means? Everyone has access to me. Which again, to a Jew, is not, at this point in the first century, is not something they're going to welcome very much. Because they very become accustomed to not being the light to the Gentiles, but to burning them with that light. Alright, so let's look at verse 24. Jesus left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre. Now, we need to look at our handy-dandy map. And the reason why is because you have to understand the significance of what's occurring here in this movement. First of all, where are we in the clean and unclean issue? Anybody know where we're at? We don't really know exactly. It's kind of a trick answer. Not totally trick, but we're in the region over here of Gennesaret. It doesn't necessarily tell us that there is a shift of location. But we just see Pharisees and teachers of the law from Jerusalem. Now, the likely guess would be that maybe Jesus at this point had migrated up. And the reason why is because more than likely good kosher Jews aren't going to be coming down in this predominantly Gentile area. But we don't really know where he's at. Nevertheless, Jesus finds himself in the region of Tyre and Sidon. Now, there is no question of what type of region that is. Now, is there? What type of region is this? What's that? Gentile. Very clearly. As a matter of fact, in Jewish Old Testament understanding, Tyre and Sidon became stock symbols for pagan people. If you wanted to talk about the pagan people, the Baal worshippers, the arrogance, their power, and their wealth, you would refer to Tyre and Sidon as kind of a stock symbol for those type of people. And you can see this in Isaiah 23. You can see this in Jeremiah 25, Jeremiah 27, Ezekiel 26, Joel 3, Zechariah 9. You get the point. Tyre and Sidon are stock symbols for Gentiles. And that's where Jesus moves. Notice the significance of Jesus. It says he left the region, the place they were at, and he went to the vicinity of Tyre and Sidon. Intentionally, Jesus is moving toward the region of the Gentiles. Pretty significant. Because at this point, that was not a part of his modus operandi. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know it. He didn't want anybody to know he was there. Yet he could not keep his presence secret. Why? Can you think of anywhere that we have seen Tyre and Sidon before that would make us not be surprised by that statement? That Jesus was well known there. Anybody remember? This might be a good in what chapter? Maybe I should do that. I'll give you a hint. It's before chapter 5. I hear rumblings. Be bold. Say it loud. Anybody remember?
Chapter 3.
That's exactly right. Turn to Mark chapter 3, verse 8. Jesus has the Sabbath controversy in verses 1 through 6. And then we get the results of the honor-shame war game. Verse 7, Jesus withdrew his disciples to the lake, and a large crowd from Galilee followed. When they heard all he was doing, many people came to him from Judea, Jerusalem, Idumea, and the regions across the Jordan and around Tyre and Sidon. So it shouldn't shock us that Jesus had a hard time inside of this region because they have borne witness to what he is able to do. Nevertheless, what is significant about it is that in chapter 3, verse 8, they came to him. But here in chapter 7, he is going to them into a predominantly Gentile territory. Now, for the kosher Jews that we have following Jesus, that would have made them feel a little uncomfortable. Nevertheless, at this point, maybe they're thinking the only way we can get away is by going to places where no good Jew would actually sit. And that's where they go. Verse 25, in fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an evil spirit came and fell at his feet. Several different things are happening here, predominantly linguistically. Linguistically, good grief. There are some key links that are just stated in that verse. Number one, it does not say in the text, evil spirit. Guess what it says? Unclean spirit. What does that tell you? The same word that's just been used at the very beginning of chapter 7. What does that tell you? Yeah, the conversation hasn't really shifted, has it? No. He's been talking about clean and unclean, and now an unclean, dirty Gentile woman comes to him talking about the unclean spirit that possesses her little daughter. Where else have we, if you had to guess, where else have we seen the word little daughter? Jairus's little daughter. But there's a big difference between Jairus's little daughter when he's coming to ask for help and this woman, and what is it? Yeah, he's a Jewish synagogue leader. Of course the Messiah is going to pay attention to him. This woman is a Gentile. Matter of fact, we'll find out in the next verse, she was Greek and born Syrophoenician. Greek, for a Jew, is even worse. Because the Greeks and the Jews were in constant war. They did not like each other. They hated each other. Primarily because the Jews, one of the key links of their history in the 2nd and 1st century, regarded what? Wars against whom? The Greek Empire, right? Antiochus Epiphanes in 175, who eventually, because of his actions regarding the altar sacrifices, causes Mattathias to get upset, lash out. I'm saying leash out, but that's not right, because if he leashes out, he's pulled back. Lash out against them, even killing the Greek official, as well as the other guy that came to do the sacrifice, and him and his sons go off into the mountains and start launching violent war campaigns against the Greek Empire, and we can read about all this in 1st and 2nd Maccabees. The Greeks and the Jews have a bad history. Because maybe the Greeks even look at the Jews as, you're one of the reasons why our whole empire fell. Because when we were spending so much time and resources in that region to make sure the eastern part of the empire was secure, Rome was building in the west. And Rome eventually, in the middle of the first century, in about 63, wipes them out. Concludes the ministry of the Greek Empire. That'd be more accurate. The fact that she is Greek, this is a Gentile of Gentiles. This woman is dirty and unclean. There is another word that connects this woman to a previous narrative or a previous scene, and that is the word for fell at his feet, prosipto. This same word is found in Mark chapter 5, verse 33, referring to the woman that was bleeding and unclean for 12 years. So notice the scene that linguistically we are keenly attached to. Do you remember the scene? Describe it to me really quick. Linguistically, what scene are we attached to in Mark chapter 5? What's that? Yes. Jesus is on his way to Jairus' house because Jairus says, my little daughter is dying. Jesus is on his way there, and what happens? Crowds are pushing around him, and all of a sudden he says, who touched me? And Peter's like, really? We're really going to ask that question? And Jesus says, I felt somebody touch me. And all of a sudden the woman, knowing that she had just been healed, comes to him and falls before her, and she'd been bleeding for how long? 12 years. Completely unclean. And how old was the little daughter that Jesus ends up resurrecting? 12. And what do we talk about those numbers probably were indicated in that scene? Yeah, the spiritual sickness of the nation of Israel. And if they would prosipto themselves to Jesus, bow down before him, then they too could be healed. And now we have this Gentile who everyone would agree that is spiritually is a mess. She is unclean as unclean gets. And she comes and prosipptos herself to talk about the little daughter that has an unclean spirit. You see what's happening? Okay. If you were, okay, really quick, put yourself in the eyes of the disciples. What would you expect Jesus to do in this moment? What's that?
Heal him just like he had before.
You think so? But see, maybe, But here's the difference. What Jesus does to Jews doesn't mean he's going to do that to Gentiles. Because his ministry to the Gentiles will be totally different. And what will it more than likely be? Violence. Is that not what the Jews were expecting? When the Messiah comes, he may be benevolent to the nation of Israel, but he's not going to be benevolent to all the nations. For the enemy will get theirs. They will be destroyed. That'll play in a minute. Verse 26, the woman was a Greek, born in Syrophoenicia. She begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. She begged him, begged him. The word begged is used, I believe, 6 times. I think that's right. No, 8 times. And it's always used in Gentile territory. Or referring to Gentile territory. Well, actually it is 7 times. No, it's 8 times. I'm right. Mark 5:10. The demons begged Jesus again and again not to send them out of the area. Mark 5:12, again, the demons beg them, hey, please, Jesus, send us into the pigs. Mark 5:17, they beg, the people of Gennesaret beg Jesus to leave their region. Mark 5:18, the demon-possessed person that's been healed begs Jesus that he can go with them. And Jesus says, stay in the Gentile region. Mark 6:56, whenever Jesus returns back to Gennesaret, they beg to touch the hem of his robe. And now we'll see this woman, 2 different times, the word begged will be attached to her. Usually Gentile. She begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. Verse 27, first, let the children eat all they want, he told her. For it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs. Now, you need to understand something here. Jesus is calling this woman a dog in this sentence. Okay? We can try to sidestep it all we want. He is calling her a dog in this situation. She interprets that very accurately in the following verses. And what is he saying, though? He's describing the method of the ministry from the Messiah. You first go to the Israelites, then, by extension, they will go to the Gentiles. Nevertheless, why does he have to call her a dog? Jesus, that's not very seeker sensitive. I think I understand why. But you're gonna have to track with me on this one. There are some couple of options, though. Number one, maybe Jesus was just trying to simply refuse expanding his ministry to the Gentiles, and that's why he calls her a dog. He's like, I've not come here to expand my ministry here. I've just come here to get away. I'm on vacation, lady. I don't want ministry right now. Maybe that's what's happening. I mean, we do that, don't we? Well, you'll learn that later in ministry, maybe. Oh, no, I'm going on vacation. I'm not going to be talking about Jesus to anybody. Oh, okay. Whatever that means. I don't think that's very likely, though, that's what Jesus is doing. And the reason why is because his ministry already has expanded to the Gentile region through the Gerasene demoniac. Right? It's not like this is the very first Gentile he has come in contact with in the Gospel of Mark. Mark chapter 5, with the Gerasene demoniac, he was a Gentile in the Decapolis region, in this region here, a highly Hellenized region. So I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's likely. And besides the fact, if he didn't want to expand his ministry to the Gentile, he didn't have to call her a dog. He could have just said, my time is not yet, woman. He says that in John 2. Although I think there's different reasons for that. But the second possibility is maybe Jesus is just like the Jews, the rest of the Jews of the day. Maybe he really is like him. Maybe he does struggle with bigotry and prejudice and just can't help himself. Every once in a while it just comes out at him. Yeah, I don't think that's likely either. For a couple of reasons. It's not like he had an allergic reaction to the Gerasene demoniac, or he even would have been probably willing to stay in the region of the Decapolis if they haven't begged him to leave. He ends up going back there. He's the one that went into this region to begin with. Not to mention the fact, in just a moment, he will heal the woman. The woman's daughter, excuse me. So it's not like he's going, yeah, I'm like the rest of the Jews. I can barely stand to be around you. Probably not like, it's a possibility, probably not likely. What is the other possibility? Well, let's answer this question by asking whether or not the woman argues her way into a miracle. Because that's what it seems to happen in verse 28. Yes, Lord. Now notice that, even after he calls her a dog, what does she respond with? Lord. That's a pretty important term. She says, even if you talk to me harshly, I deserve that. I am so desperate that if somebody doesn't help me, I can't get help. I know I'm supposed to be outside of your kingdom. I'm not even asking to be a key part of your kingdom. I'm not even asking to sit at the table of your kingdom. I'm just asking to be in the room. I don't want the chief seats. I just want the floor. She says, Lord, but even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. She said, give me something. Even the leftovers. I'm cool with that. Give me the leftovers. What do we call that? Faith. The acknowledgement and the submission of the identity of Jesus. Then he told her, for such a reply, you may go. The demon has left your daughter. Did the woman argue her way into a miracle? Here's what I think could be happening. I wonder, because no other option seems good to me, I wonder if Jesus is articulating what the disciples were thinking. Because remember, after the clean and unclean issue in verse 17, the disciples still didn't get it, did they? As a matter of fact, they bring Jesus as after he had left the crowd and entered the house, his disciples asked him about this parable. And Jesus says, are you really so dull? They call it a parable. What was parabolic about chapter 7? It's pretty straightforward. And they're going, clearly you don't mean what you really say that you said you mean. What do you really mean, Jesus? He says, you really don't get it, do you? You're really confused. And now the unclean, clean issue comes to a head wherever they have a chance to actually put into practice what they've just talked about. For someone that is unclean, that has a daughter with an unclean spirit, comes to Jesus and says, will you make me clean? And the disciples are going, we don't have time for this dog. We don't have time for this. It makes me wonder if before Jesus even said it, if he kind of looked around and saw in the eyes of Peter and saw in the eyes of Judas and saw in the eyes of even John and James, who were very big bigots. Remember, James and John, the sons of thunder, are the ones that say, hey, Jesus, do you want us to call down fire on the Samaritans and just wipe them out? Jesus is like, what? What? And just relax, you psychos. I love John. We're bigoted too. Let's not throw them all under the bus. Makes me wonder if sometimes if we were sitting in a room, if Jesus would look around and he would look at the older person that was asking him for hymns and he would say, hey dog, you're going to get what you want. Or you're going to get what's left over for you. And we're over in the corners going, yep, it's contemporary music. That's the best way to evangelize. Really? We're just prejudiced in different ways. We have ageism, economically. Oh, and definitely ethnically, by the way. Don't act like, from your white perspective, that racism's over in America. Just because Obama's president doesn't mean we've really crossed any hurdles when it comes to ethnic prejudices. I wonder, though, if Jesus is saying, I'm going to treat her the way the disciples want me to treat her. But what the disciples would not have been comfortable with is her actually giving her what she wanted. She is a Gentile. She is a dog. She deserves nothing. And Jesus says, you still don't get it. To me, it makes the most sense. Jesus is basically looking at them saying, my kingdom's not like your kingdom, and that should not surprise you at this point. And yet it inevitably still does. Are you so dull is the question I think that seems to be running through Jesus' mind even here. And you know, Paul will agree with Jesus on this point, which is always a good thing. Romans chapter 9, verses 6 through 8, to me is quite intriguing. I think it should be used to interpret Romans 11. Because he says, for not all who are descended from Israel are Israel. Did you hear what he said? Not all who are ethnically Israel are actually Israel. He says, nor because they are his descendants are they all Abraham's children. On the contrary, it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. In other words, Paul says, it is not the natural children who are God's children, but it is the children of the promise who are regarded as Abraham's offspring. What's he saying? What's he saying?
Israel anymore, because it's not about the blood, because now the Gentiles are covered by Christ's blood too.
Absolutely. It's not about the blood of your father or your father's father. It's about the blood of Jesus. That's what defines the people of God. Period. And he'll even reiterate this in Galatians 3:7. Understand then that those who believe are children of Abraham. He says ethnic Israel has played its role. It's played its role. And its role was to open up the floodgates to the Gentiles. That was its role. And to suggest that you are more a child of Abraham because you can trace your lineage back to it is to simply not understand what Jesus did, especially in the issue of clean and unclean. Paul says, don't get me wrong, all Israel will be saved, but you got to know how to define the word Israel. Do you define it through Jesus or through your daddy's daddy? Moving on, verse 30. She went home and found her child lying on the bed and the demon gone. She didn't argue her way into a miracle. Her faith is the thing that Jesus always requires. Are you acknowledging and submitting to my identity and my power? That's the definition of those that follow Jesus. Regardless of what the disciples expected, what John the Baptist expected, hello, or what the Jewish elite expected. This is how Jesus' kingdom is defined. Then Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went through Sidon, down into the Sea of Galilee, and into the region of the Decapolis, which we will pick up tomorrow. I love you guys. See you then.